All right, get ready to dive into a case that's pure 90s pop culture gold, but with a legal twist. Imagine you're Mattel, right? The company behind Barbie, and suddenly there's this catchy but like kind of provocative song, Barbie Girl, all over the radio. What would you do?
Well, if you're Mattel back in 97, you don't just sing along, you call your lawyers. They actually hit ACA Records, the ones who produced the song, with a lawsuit.
A lawsuit.
Yeah, claiming trademark infringement, dilution, that the song would tarnish Barbie's image, even defamation. 11 claims in total. Can you believe that?
11 claims. Wow, they were not messing around. But seriously, what was so bad about Barbie Girl? It's a catchy tune, but was it really a threat to, like, the whole Barbie empire?
You got to remember, we're talking about Barbie here, right? It's this super carefully crafted brand, decades in the making. And then comes Barbie Girl with lyrics like, I'm a blonde bimbo girl in a fantasy world. Not exactly the wholesome image they were going for.
Yeah, that's quite a contrast.
Mattel was really worried the song would confuse people, you know, make them think Mattel was actually behind this, let's just say, less than family-friendly version of Barbie.
So it's like this battle between, like, bubblegum pop and this billion-dollar brand. How did the court even begin to deal with this? I mean, where do you even start when a pop song gets mixed up with trademark law?
Okay, so the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is where this case ended up, they turned to something called the Rogers test to figure it all out. It actually comes from an earlier case, Rogers v. Grimaldi, and it's become the standard for deciding if using a trademark in something artistic is, you know, actually infringement.
Okay, break down the Rogers test for us. What does it look at?
Basically, it comes down to two main questions. First, does using the trademark, like Barbie in this case, have anything to do with the artistic value of the work? Like, is it actually part of the creative expression, or are they just trying to use the brand's fame?
Got it. So the court has to figure out if they're being genuine, not just trying to, like, ride Barbie's coattails. What's the second question?
Right. So second is whether using the trademark could trick people into thinking the owner actually sponsored or endorsed the work.
Okay. So in the Barbie Girl case, did the court think Aqua was just trying to cash in on Barbie's fame?
Yeah.
Or did they see the song as, you know, legitimate art?
Well, the court decided that Barbie was a key part of what the song was trying to say, that it was commenting on and, like, parodying Barbie's image and what she represents in our culture. They didn't see it as just a cheap way to make money off the Barbie name.
Interesting. So they were making a statement, not just grabbing for cash. But what about that second part of the test? You know, the consumer confusion. Did the court really think no one would hear those lyrics and think, hey, Mattel made this?
Exactly. And, well, the court basically said, come on, no one's going to think Mattel produced the song. They decided there was no real chance of the public thinking Mattel was behind, you know, that particular version of Barbie.
So point for Aqua and artistic freedom then. It sounds like the court was saying you can use a trademark creatively, even if it's edgy, as long as you're making a real artistic point.
Exactly. It's a balancing act, right? The courts are always trying to protect trademark rights, but also uphold free speech, especially for creative stuff. And this case is a perfect example of how those two things can, like, clash.
This all brings up a question, though. What even makes a parody legally protected? Can you just slap a trademark on any joke and call it parody?
Not quite. For something to count as parody legally, it has to actually comment on or criticize the original work. You can't just use the trademark for a cheap laugh. In this case, the court saw Barbie Girl as a commentary on Barbie's image, the whole idea of, you know, unrealistic beauty standards and maybe even limiting roles for women.
Wow. So they really dug into the meaning of the song. They weren't just looking at the surface. They were trying to get the message.
Yeah, it shows how courts look at the whole context when deciding these cases. And it shows that even something like a pop song can bring up some really serious legal and social questions.
This wasn't just about Barbie and a catchy song, was it? It's about the First Amendment and, you know, where free speech ends, especially when it comes to using famous brands.
Absolutely. And Judge Kaczynski, who wrote the opinion for the Ninth Circuit, summed it up perfectly. He said, trademark rights don't let owners control what people say when their mark starts to mean something beyond just a brand. Basically, when a brand becomes part of our culture, it's fair game for artistic interpretation, even if it's not, you know, super flattering.
That's powerful. You can't just shut down an idea once it's out there. But Mattel didn't give up easily, right? They went pretty far with that defamation claim, even comparing MCA to bank robbers. Talk about dramatic.
Yeah, they definitely made a bold move there. They were trying to make MCA look like the bad guys, the ones stealing from their precious Barbie.
But did it work? Did the court buy it?
Actually, no. MCA filed a counterclaim for defamation, so things got even more intense. But in the end, the court dismissed both the original defamation claim and the counterclaim.
So Mattel trying to control the story didn't really pan out. It's a reminder that even in legal battles, sometimes less is more.
Yeah, the court basically said that tough talk is normal in these kinds of fights, especially when people are passionate. It doesn't automatically mean someone is defaming the other side. It's a good reminder to choose your words carefully, even when things get heated.
This is all fascinating. But what kind of lasting impact did this whole Mattel v. MCA thing have? Did it change how courts see trademarks and creative work?
Oh, this case didn't just fade away. It set a precedent that still affects how courts handle trademark issues in movies, video games, even political art. Anytime someone uses a trademark in a way that could be controversial, Mattel v. MCA comes up.
So a case about a pop song ended up having huge implications. But it doesn't end there, does it? How does all this connect to today's world, you know, with memes and viral stuff where brands are constantly being remixed and reinterpreted?
You've hit on something really important. Mattel v. MCA is actually more relevant now than ever. Think about it. We see brands and trademarks and memes, fan art, all over the internet. The line between commercial use and artistic expression is constantly blurred.
So Mattel v. MCA is like a roadmap for all this online creativity.
Exactly. And it brings up a big question for everyone. What if Barbie Girl hadn't been so obviously a parody? Would Mattel have won? Where's the line between clever parody and actually infringing on a trademark? It can be tough to tell, especially online.
That's a great point. This case really isn't just a thing of the past. It's still shaping how we think about trademarks and creative freedom in this digital age.
Absolutely. It shows that when a trademark becomes part of our culture, it becomes part of a bigger conversation. It can be used for commentary, criticism, even parody. Mattel v. MCA highlights the tension between protecting brands and allowing creative freedom, and that tension is only getting more complex these days.
Welcome back. We're digging deeper into this whole Barbie Girl case, Mattel v. MCA, you know, where Barbie basically ended up in court thanks to Aqua. We've covered parody and free speech, but there's another piece we haven't talked about, dilution. Mattel argued that even if Barbie Girl wasn't, like, confusing people about the brand, it was still hurting their trademark, you know, making Barbie's image less valuable and maybe even damaging the brand.
This is where it gets really interesting for those of us who love, like, the details of trademark law. It all comes down to something called the Federal Trademark Dilution Act, or FTDA for short. Back in 97, the FTDA had a special rule, an exemption for non-commercial use of a trademark.
Hold on, before we get lost in the legal stuff, can you explain dilution? I think some listeners might not be familiar with that word when it comes to trademarks.
Sure. Dilution basically means that using a trademark in a certain way can weaken how strongly people connect it to the original brand. Imagine you see the Barbie logo on products that have nothing to do with Mattel's image, you know?
Like, what kind of products are we talking about?
Well, imagine, like, a line of, I don't know, grunge-style clothing, or even a political campaign poster. It can make people think less of the brand when they see the logo. The brand, like, loses some of its uniqueness.
I get it. So even if people aren't confused about who's making the product, using the trademark too much or in the wrong way could make it less special, less powerful.
Exactly. And that's what Mattel was saying. They were basically arguing that even if Barbie Girl wasn't tricking people into thinking Mattel made it, it was still messing with the Barbie trademark because it linked Barbie to something that didn't fit their image at all.
So did the court agree with Mattel? Did they think that Barbie Girl was actually hurting the Barbie brand, like, financially?
Not really. The Ninth Circuit, which is known for, you know, defending free speech pretty strongly, basically said, look, even though Barbie Girl is being sold, it's on an album, so people are buying it, its main purpose is artistic expression, not just making money. They saw it as, you know, commentary on society, not a sneaky way to steal Mattel's customers or profits.
That's a tricky difference. It sounds like the court was saying that, yeah, Aqua's making money from the song, but their main goal wasn't to, like, hijack the Barbie brand. They wanted to express themselves artistically, and they just happened to use a famous trademark to do it.
You got it. And this decision had effects way beyond just the music industry. It reinforced the idea that creative works, even the ones that are sold, could still be protected from dilution claims as long as their main purpose was really about expression. It was huge for filmmakers, artists, writers, anyone using trademarks in their work.
So in a way, Mattel v. MCA actually helped to give more legal protection to artists who want to use trademarks. Like, they drew a line and said, we're not going to let big companies shut down creative projects just because they use a famous name. especially if they're trying to say something meaningful.
That's a great way to put it. It really shows that constant tension between trademark law, which is about protecting brands and making sure people aren't tricked, and the First Amendment, which is all about freedom of speech, even if you're making fun of a big company.
It makes you wonder what creative stuff we'd be missing out on if this case hadn't happened. Would artists be as free to use trademarks? Would we even have the same, you know, wild meme culture that loves to remix brand logos and stuff?
Those are great questions. And they show what makes this case so interesting, even all these years later. Mattel v. MCA isn't just some old legal case. It's still affecting our digital world, where the line between commercial and artisanal is always being pushed.
And speaking of pushing boundaries, we can't forget that Mattel wasn't exactly, you know, staying calm during all this. Remember how they went kind of crazy with those public statements comparing MCA to criminals? They really wanted to control how everyone saw the situation, like they were the victims.
Yeah, their PR, you know, public relations strategy was definitely intense. They seemed like they were trying to use public opinion to put pressure on MCA and maybe even the court. But like we said, trying to control the narrative with such strong language actually backfired on them.
Right. It's like something that sounded good in a meeting, but didn't work out so well in court. Even in a legal fight, you got to be careful about what you say publicly and how a judge might see it.
For sure. It's a good reminder to, you know, pick your battles and choose your words carefully.
Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We've been taking apart this landmark case, Mattel v. MCA, you know, where Barbie ended up in court, thanks to that Barbie Girl song. It's wild to see how this case set a precedent for how we think about trademarks today, especially with all the digital stuff happening.
And that precedent's more relevant than ever. Think about it. Memes can make or break a brand these days. Fan art can go viral so fast. And anyone can create stuff online that, like, plays with trademarks. This case makes us ask, where's the line? When does being creative turn into trademark infringement?
Right. It's a question that keeps lawyers and judges up at night, I bet.
Yeah.
But let's go back to Mattel for a sec. What if they had done things differently? Could they have actually won this thing? Or was Barbie Girl just too much of a parody for them to, like, have a chance?
That's where it gets interesting. The court said Barbie Girl was clearly a parody, protected by the First Amendment, right? But what if the song had been less, you know, obviously poking fun? What if it had used the Barbie name in a way that was harder to define?
So it's not always clear-cut, parody, or infringement. There's a gray area, right?
Absolutely. And that's why this case is so important for anyone who cares about trademark law. It shows that balancing trademark rights and creative freedom is a constant challenge. Imagine a song that mentions Barbie but doesn't make fun of her directly. Maybe it uses her name to evoke a certain feeling, like childhood memories or something. Would that be infringement? Or would it be okay as artistic expression? There's no easy answer.
It's like a legal puzzle where every case is different. But let's zoom out for a minute and think about the big picture impact of Mattel v. MCA. We talked about parody, free speech, but what about brands? Did this case change how companies protect their trademarks? Did they become, like, more careful, more likely to sue?
It definitely woke up a lot of brands. They realized they can't always control how their trademarks are used out there, especially when those trademarks become part of our culture, like part of our everyday lives.
So it's not just about, you know, locking down your trademark and stopping any use that's not allowed. There's more to think about.
Exactly. This case made brands think more strategically about their trademarks. Instead of just shutting down any use that wasn't specifically approved, they started to see that maybe there were some good things about these creative ways people were using their brands.
So instead of always sending those cease and desist letters, companies started to see that sometimes it's better to, like, embrace those creative uses of their trademarks.
Exactly. Some brands realized it could be free advertising or a way to connect with their audience in a more genuine way. They learned that sometimes a little creative freedom can actually help their image, make them seem more relevant and relatable.
That's a cool shift in thinking. It's like they had to adapt to this new world where their trademarks could be used in ways they didn't expect, sometimes even to criticize them. They had to loosen up a little and see the potential good in letting go of some control.
It's an ongoing process, and it shows how influential Mattel v. MCA really was. This case wasn't just a fight between a toy company and a band. It made us change how we think about brands, the public, culture, and creativity itself.
This whole deep dive into Mattel v. MCA has been amazing. It's incredible how a case about a 90s pop song about a doll could have such a lasting impact on law and the way we think about brands and creative expression.
It shows that the law isn't just, you know, boring rules and regulations. It's about real-world issues that affect our culture, our creativity, and our freedom to express ourselves. And as technology keeps changing, we're going to see more and more cases that deal with these big questions.
So true. And on that note, we've come to the end of our deep dive. But here's something to think about. As technology keeps changing so fast, what new challenges will we face at the crossroads of trademark law and creative freedom? That's something that'll keep legal minds busy for years to come.
Absolutely. We'll have to keep looking back at the basic ideas from Mattel v. MCA and figuring out what they mean in this new world. These ideas remind us that the law needs to find that balance between protecting brands and making sure our culture is vibrant and creative.